Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side, your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio, all podcast catchers and YouTube. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and as always, my co-host, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, we're doing this during the daylight hours.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said debunking all myths that I am a vampire.
Well, I'll tell you somebody that may be a vampire, and we're going to get into why I think that in a second, but because I've known this guy forever. We've known each other. The first time I ever did comedy at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, this guy was the host.
Oh, wow.
And he looks exactly the same. He's never changed his look, and he doesn't age, so he might be a vampire. That's why he's on the show. It's Dante.
Thanks, buddy. You look the same exactly, too.
I mean, I've grown the beard, the hair's a different color, but you always have that same look. Sometimes you have the soul patch, sometimes you don't, but pretty consistent.
Yeah. I mean, I updated with the times, I suppose, you know, like when you first met me, I had a bit of a pompadour, then I had a little point on my head, but my look's pretty consistent. You know what I mean? I think that that's part of Hollywood. We are the product. You know what I mean? You want to recognize Pepsi Cola, so I always try to have a certain look. So like when I walk through an airport, my fans are like, oh, there's Dante walking by or whatever. You know what I mean?
Does that happen a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot. It used to happen more, but I would say if I go to the airport, it's probably like once every time I go, someone says, that's pretty nice.
That's very nice. That's a great thing. And Dante is not only a comedian, very funny comedian, has been since I've known him and just gets better and better. But he runs the U.S. Comedy Contest. He's a manager. He has Golden Artist Entertainment, manages all sorts of celebrities and comedians and musicians, writer, director, actor. He's done it all, and he's still doing it all. And activist, politician, I mean, you've done everything.
Like, what do I do, man? I said, good Lord.
And that's today, during the day, on a Thursday, he's at the car wash doing a podcast. So, podcaster too. So we're going to get into that. Before we do, I do have to say, I've got to keep the energy up. We're during the day. Nicole just woke up. I didn't, but I do need a burst of energy. And here it is. I've got mine. It's disappearing and reappearing. It's Raise Energy Drinks. These are the best energy drinks. Raise, R-A-Z-E. You can't get this in the stores or 7-Eleven. You can get them at gyms, GNCs, or better yet, use my code, get 15% off a case. Remember after the show last week when I poured some Raise energy drink out for a couple people that were skeptical? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They had another energy drink, said this is the best. I poured them a Raise. They're like, wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
And best part about it, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash.
Woo!
This is my last voodoo flavor. I'm going to get another case using my code, which will be in the show description on YouTube and on all podcast catchers. Love Raise Energy Drinks. They're the best. We got a new sponsor, too. Now, Dante, I don't know if this happens to you, and I'm such a shill, but there's plenty to talk about. But
okay.
You're in great shape, but I've seen you're heavier, I've seen you're thinner. It seems that most people are between two sizes. They're not smalls, they're not mediums, they're not large, they're not extra large, they're somewhere in between, right?
Yeah.
But what's great about this is we are sponsored by CulturedDillon.com. What they do, they don't have sizes. Because people struggle with t-shirts that fit as well as the one, you know, you loved, you wore out. Extra large used to be bigger than it is now. Or if you're skinny, sometimes a large looks like a dress, it's baggy on the sides. So you got to check out Culture Dillon. They master the perfect fit. What they do is you send them your measurements. They custom make a t-shirt for you. They master the perfect fit, added fabric color options, and personalized artwork to deliver your perfect t-shirts. And you can try your first custom fitted tee today with 50% off using the code DARK50. At CultureDillon.com. That link will be in the description as well. I love this. I've got a shirt on order. I can't wait because I'm losing a little weight. So I'm between large and extra large. And this is going to fit me perfect. I can't wait for this. So,
congratulations.
Yes. So I congratulations. I have a t-shirt. I have an energy drink. What else do I need? I have Dante as a guest. That's what I need. Dante.
I want to know that t-shirt place's name again.
Coulter Dillon.
All right.
And use Dark 50. I will send you the link. CoulterDillon.com.
Thanks.
And Dark 50, and you get 50% off your first t-shirt. It's great. We're coming on our 9-year anniversary of this podcast. It hasn't been consistently 9 years. We took a couple years off, but my first time I did my podcast was at the John Lovitz Club, which is no longer there, at Universal Studios for the GoCast Network.
GoCast.
You know who had the show before me?
Was Dante
and Rebecca.
Yep.
Remember those days?
I do remember that. We had a podcast, I think it was called The Stimulus Package.
Yes. And Rebecca is your lovely wife, Rebecca Culkin. We're going to talk about her later. Yeah. But that was actually a really good, by the way, I was the one that jinxed the whole thing. And in a month, they closed down. But they had Gary Garver, our friend, who was on Howard Stern show. They had the Chris Farley's brothers. They had Darren Carter. They had.
They had, what's his name, who's blowing up right now? Adam, he just played Jay Leno on Pam and Tommy. They had Brad Williams.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I still don't know what happened, but I remember I was excited. I got into podcasting and I went in and just, and my first guest, first show, April 1st, 2013, Bree Walker, the newscaster, and a magician doing sleight of hand. So, I'm always about the irony.
I used to have a crush on her, man, Bree Walker.
I can make an introduction. She's a very good friend. She's been on the show many a time, but
she seems like a sweet lady.
She's very nice. Nicole is friends with her. We're all friends with her.
Yeah.
We brought out our wild side on the podcast because I brought some absinthe for everybody to drink, and people got a little tipsy, and she was doing splits, and it was interesting. It was a side of her you don't see on the podcast on her newscast. But we go back further than that, because the first time I did comedy, I'm not going to say when it was because it was in the Stone Age, but I was at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, and the host was this kid, was Dante.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know, a kid. Yeah, I didn't even move to LA until I turned 21. I'd been doing comedy since I was a child. Like, literally, I started at 7 in the middle of nowhere on a Navy base and only got to perform at talent shows and in my backyard. And then when I moved to San Diego, Faison Love, who was Big Worm in Friday, and he was in all the, John Favreau movies. He and I went to high school together. He was a couple years older than me, but when I showed up to the Comedy Store, he was the doorman. And I knew he wasn't 21 either. And I was like, how are you doing this? He's like, because I look 50, which he did. He looked like the same age as he does now. He goes, but you don't. He goes, but I can tell you what. Instead of saying that you're 15, I will tell everyone that you're 19. So that way you and I, at the time, I had a comedy partner called The Wolf. He goes, that way you and The Wolf only have to run in and run out for 2 years. After that, it'll save you 3 years. Because I was like 15. And I was like, fine, this is great. So 4 years, it cuts off. But yeah, it was funny. When I had my fake 21st birthday 2 years later, I had made a fake ID. No one even checked it because Faison had told them for years. And what's funny is, I don't know if you remember Frank Manzano.
Of course.
He came up to me and Anthony Ramos and said, and Anthony was the only one who knew my real age because he was my close friend. But they said, he goes, Dante, remember this day. You'll never be 21 again. And Anthony turned to him and he goes, you never know.
Yeah, San Diego is pretty loose with the IDs. I remember having my going to Diego's, and I was 19. Yeah, and then when it was my 21st birthday, I would show everybody my ID, and they're like, "Motherfucker!"
I know.
You've been sneaking in the whole time, but Faison was in San Diego. I had no idea.
Yeah, Faison. So many people went to my high school, just throughout time. I don't know why. I don't know. It's not a theater.
Henry High School, by the way.
But it was called Patrick Henry High School. Annette Bening went there. RuPaul went there. A bunch of comedians. Tommy Chun. Do you know Tommy Chun? Black comedian.
Yes.
Yeah, he's really funny. Melissa Greenberg is from there. My years, yeah, a couple years older. But yeah, it was crazy. A lot of stand-ups came out of there.
Well, we're going to get really nerdy into San Diego stuff, so hold on, Nicole. There's more to come. But because Dante went to Patrick Henry High School, which is kind of where the Navy housing is. It's kind of by the sports arena. Am I right or am I wrong?
Patrick Henry is by college. It's by it's off of Waring or College.
Oh, okay, I'm thinking something else. Okay, I'm thinking Point Loma is what I'm thinking of.
Hey, my car's ready.
Yeah, I know. He's Dante, by the way, is joining us at the car wash. This is modern technology at its finest. And the car looks very nice, very clean.
Thank you, buddy.
But no, I'm thinking Point Loma is what it is. Okay, you went to Patrick Henry. I got it. I was Mission Bay High School.
Oh, yeah, Mission Bay. I used to teach over there. Comedian who was a teacher there always had me come in and like teach drama and stuff.
Oh yeah,
thank you, friend. Okay. Have a good day. All right,
thank you.
Bye, buddy. Sorry, guys.
No, that's okay. No, you were mentioning your first partner, and this is where I think you're a vampire, Dante. Who just
yes,
this is why I think you're a vampire, because there's a clip on YouTube I was watching the other day where you're at the Laugh Factory and you brought your first comedy partner on stage, and I'm assuming you're the same age, but and no
oh,
offense
God,
to the
that
guy,
looks
but he
terrible.
Looks like he's your father.
I know. He looks like Uncle Fester. Yes, when I was 7 years old, I didn't do stand-up on my own back then either. I had a partner to begin, and we didn't really have a name. His name was Jared McQuarrie, and he grew up on the same Navy base, and my dad was in charge of, like, USO shows, and some improv group came through, and I'd always wanted to be a comic, so when we saw it, I turned to him, I'm like, let's do stand-up comedy. So we kind of stole some ideas from the people, but not their jokes, just the ideas of what they had done, which was basically like changing of channels on a television. And then we would come up with funny ways that the, you know, every time he would flip around or I would flip around, it's like changing the channel. And we would come up with silly, silly stuff that made kids laugh. Like, you know, Alpo dog food, the best dog food for, and then he would turn around and be like, Farrah Fawcett. For, you know, hair salons, blah, blah, you know, so it was that kind of thing where like everything you said led to the next person turning around.
Right. And for the young people listening, Farrah Fawcett was a sex symbol in the 70s. She had a lot of hair, luxurious hair. Just, I didn't want our younger viewers to be confused and our younger.
Hey, I barely knew kidding, who she though. Was. I was fun, a little yeah. kid when she was famous too. You know what I mean? Like, I just was trying to name someone from the 70s.
No, I'm kidding.
But you are so correct about my ex-partner. The poor guy looks much older than me. And, you know, I don't know how to describe that. But I also feel like that when I go to my high school reunions. I also feel like I'm like, a lot of people look great. And then the other half, I'm like, did your parents show up for you? Like,
I know what you mean. I've only been to one reunion. But, yeah, it was the same thing. It was like some people look the same. Some people look better, which is, that's the rarity. And then the rest of the people, it's like, do you want me to dig your grave? Because you're halfway in it. I don't know what's going on, but.
I know, man. It's so weird and so sad. It's crazy.
It's really like the, crazy. When Tom Cruise, the last Mission Impossible he did.
Yeah.
He was the same age as Wilford Brimley when he was in Cocoon.
Right. Right. That's it. And that's the other thing. If you take good care of yourself, you can look young forever. That's just the key. It is. Right, it's Nicole? Like if you eat, you know, if you want to eat pizza every night and die at 55 from a heart attack or whatever, that's a choice. But if you want to live forever and look young and stay young, that's, it takes effort. It doesn't happen.
Yeah. I remember when I started doing comedy, I was surprised when I found out you were actually a few months younger than myself, because I thought you had to be 21 to do it. And I didn't start. First time I did comedy was in junior high at a talent show. I entered a comedy contest when I was 19 and I was like, okay, I'll wait till I'm 21, but I didn't have to wait. And you know,
cool.
Silly me. I didn't have the connections you did.
I didn't have any connections. I just
yeah, Faison Love. That's asked. A pretty good connection.
That's all I just asked. But you're right. Faison, if I didn't have Faison there, I would have had to wait a long time. So that definitely helped. It did. But yeah, I would have figured out a way to cheat it anyway. Because, I mean, you know, when it's your goal and it's your life, you'll figure out anything and everything you can do, you know?
Right. Did they ever afterwards, I would hear Rosie. Go ahead, Nicole.
I was going to say, did they ever find out about your little scam?
Charade? Yeah, they did, but only after I told them. Like, there were a million opportunities for them to find out. Because, like, you know, one time they got robbed and I was like the person the guy pulled the gun on and all this other stuff. And I could have pressed charges, but I didn't because they would have to take my ID and find out that I was not 21. Right. So there were little things like that that happened quite a bit. You guys, I just pulled up somewhere so that I can just
well, I appreciate talk. All right. Well, here's the thing about the San Diego comedy scene when we were in San Diego is I remember at the time, and I was first starting doing comedy because I didn't know anything. And I remember people saying, there's so many great comedians here. This is like the New York scene in the 60s. This is like the Houston scene in the 80s. And I was like, I'll bet every fucking scene says that. But in retrospect,
it was a great scene. Comics. Right. Bobby Lee, Darren Carter, you know, I never really saw
Karen
him.
Rontowski still out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Karen Rontowski. What's his name? Lamont Ferguson.
Right.
Is working, but I never saw him down there. But I guess Doug Benson is also from San Diego. But yeah, San Diego at that time had tons and tons of pretty big names. Faison, yeah, Mark Brazil, who created that 70s show.
Right. Dat Fan.
Dat Fan, that's right.
Who won the last comic standing. It was a great scene.
Yeah, man.
And I didn't
it was.
Know that I was seeing great, you know, the gestation of great comedians down there. I thought it was just, this is the way it is with everybody.
I know. I did too. And, you know, when you're starting out and you feel like everyone around you is going to be famous and so are you, it's a weird kind of thing, isn't it?
Like, well, in my case, everyone did except for me, but, you know, that's the way it goes. I'm still,
hey man, I'm sure that there's 1,000 people that feel the same way. And even some of the ones that you feel like made it probably say the same things about themselves.
Right.
I'm the opposite. I set out not to be Tom Cruise, not to be, you know, I don't know, Richard Pryor or whatever. I set out just to be a good comedian and make a living at it.
Right.
And if I could do that, I was like, man, I will be the happiest guy ever.
There they are coming at you for that fake ID.
They know. Yeah. Oh.
And then but, I ended up, I know, I've got to get away from this place. It's too many. Goddamn. Like, all of Hollywood is just ambulances.
You're telling me, yeah. It's trust me, it's, yeah, this is, as I said, we're really close to each other and we're on Zoom, but any of one of our residences, police engines, fire engines can go off at any time.
Always. Yes.
Time. And always during the show. But you moved to LA and you became the funniest black man in Los Angeles. And yeah. I hate to tell you, you're not black.
I know, man. I tried to tell that too. I tried to tell people. I was like,
I mean, the balls to go up and enter the contest, much less win it.
Yeah, that was crazy. So yeah, in like the mid 90s, when it was like the hip hop 90s era, and probably one of the hardest times to be in black comedy, is when I thought it would be a great fucking idea to do so. So I did, and it actually turned out great. I ended up becoming like the most famous white guy on BET at the time for like 10 years, and had my own sitcom on there. Well, not my own, but it was like me and it was an ensemble cast.
Right.
Blackberry Inn that was on for like 3 years. And we had lots of fun cast members and lots of good guests. It was a hotel. So every week we had a different celebrity from the time, you know, like Warren G would be on one show or Lisa Leslie. We were the last appearance for Richard Pryor.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it was so sad because Paul Mooney
came on season two as a writer, and DeMilitant, who just passed away, was a writer. Right. And we all were good friends with Richard. And so we said to him, hey, you want to come on? And he was like, yeah. But then the day he showed up, his MS was so bad, he couldn't talk. And so his friend David, who I knew, was there with him pushing a wheelchair. And we basically said to David, hey, man, can you do the scene with Richard where he whispers to you his lines, but he's not really even saying anything? And then you just say, hey, Mr. Pryor says blah, blah, blah. And that's what we sadly ended up having to do.
Wow. That's too bad. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
That was terrible, but I think that was a really clever way to handle it.
Yeah. Like, I didn't know how we were going to handle it, because that's also very delicate when you have, at the time, the king of all comedy in the world. And, you know, this poor guy shows up and can't even talk. You don't even know how to approach him about it, you know? Even though I was friends with him, I still kind of had to turn to Paul and be like, Paul, do you want to handle this? Because I don't even know what to fucking say here.
Right.
And if people don't know, Paul Mooney, who also just passed away, great writer and was Richard Pryor's writer for years, if people don't know. But, I mean, what was the first time you met Richard Pryor? You said you guys were friends.
Yeah, man. So, you know, once I moved to L.A., in 91, I was friends immediately with like Kinnison and Dice and Pryor, probably because I was the little kid who, right. You know, telling them all how much I loved them, and they could see that I was really trying, and they're like, okay, I'll mentor this kid. You know, like I remember right before Kinnison died, he filmed his last special. And I remember it was a huge deal. It was sold out. I couldn't even get in, even though I was his friend.
Was that the Wool Turn?
What's that?
Was that at the Wool Turn?
No, it was at the Comedy Store. Like, oh, okay. I don't know, maybe a month before he died. And I was kind of sad, but I was like, you know what? I'll go sit in the kitchen and see if I can just hear the whole show. So I went to the Comedy Store kitchen, and I'm sitting in there, and the show hasn't started. And then all of a sudden you hear whoever it is go, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Kinnison. And the crowd goes crazy. And I see Sam walk down the hallway, you know, from the kitchen. I watch him. He looks in and sees me, runs up to me, and he goes, Dante. And he holds up two berets. And he's like, red or black? And I hear, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Kinnison, where are you? Come right. on in, Sam. And he's like, Dante, I'm being serious. Red or black? I was like, Sam, they're calling you. You got to go. He's like, Dante, I am not fucking leaving here until you tell me if I'm wearing red or black. I was like, red, go. He's like, okay, good choice. And he like took off, and then he went and did his show. But I was like, that's the kind of like the way they, like the young kid always like trying to make me feel special. You know, it was nice, man. It was a crazy time. My wife, who's a comedian, can't even believe that I had such a crazy life.
If I wasn't adjacent to you, I wouldn't believe it myself, but I know you, I know you are telling the truth. Now, when he says red and black, was he talking about pills or bandanas or what?
No, beret.
Oh, beret. His beret. You know how he wore beret all the time?
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. He was holding two of them, and I guess he wore the red one that night.
You know, Sam Kinnison, you never can tell when he's shouting out colors, but, now, when you first met Richard Pryor, was he in a wheelchair or was he still walking?
No. He was still okay. He could walk around, but his voice was different, you know, like, because I do impressions. So I used to be able to do like the young Richard Pryor voice. And then once I was hanging out with him all the time, I ended up kind of learning the sick Richard Pryor voice. You know what I mean? Because like when he's younger, he's like, oh, yeah, this car, you know, blah, 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 the car. And then when he was older, he was like, see that woman right there? She likes pussy more than me. So it's much slower. You know what I mean? Like different.
So he literally turned into Mudbone.
Yeah, he did. He turned into Mudbone. Exactly.
Right. Which is one of his characters.
Yeah.
But I remember distinctly when you won the funniest black man in LA. Now, and we've done, you and I have done shows in black rooms together. So I know you could go over in that crowd. And I can too. I didn't get the Comedy Store for until a long time, and I was doing black rooms. And when I would come back to the Comedy Store, I'd be a little much for the Comedy Store. I had to tone it down. But was the reaction from everybody, or were there some people that are like, how dare a white man win the funniest black man in LA? I know, some of the comics.
Person I heard say that was Faison, and he didn't say it to me in a mean way. He was just like, I think it's kind of fucked up that you want the funniest black comic. I was like, Faison, we're in the middle of, and we were in the middle of like the Rodney King bullshit at the finals. Rodney King and his lawyer were there. They were judges, right. You know, huge names. And I beat out, like, if you saw the lineup, everybody went on to be super famous. It was like Earthquake, Chris Tucker, this guy, you know, on and on. Everybody you could name who's a famous black comic who wasn't already famous at the time.
Right. Well, was Freeze Love one of the guys? Because he told me that Rodney King judged him, and I guess he and Rodney King had a beef, so that it didn't go well.
He did. And you know what's funny about Freeze Love? The very first time I ever met him, it's a funny story, man. This is a great... So I don't know if you know, there's a hip-hop comedy documentary on Netflix or something right now, or HBO. I didn't know, but my friend showed me a photo. I guess I'm in it, but I don't think I have any lines or something. But they just show me here and there, you know?
Right.
But what was the point of all this? The documentary. Freeze Love. Oh, Freeze Love, yeah. So part of the documentary is about this club at the Comedy Store called Fat Tuesdays, which I had started on Tuesdays in the Belly Room. And then someone took it over and turned it into Fat Tuesdays, blah, blah, blah. But when I had it, it was so popular. Like, Dr. Dre was there almost every week, Shaq, Snoop Dogg, Tupac, on and on. Everyone was there, Hammer. It was just a hot black spot. And right. I was pretty getting famous from BET and all this other stuff. But it was my room. And if someone fucked up or went over their time, I got on them about it. And so there was this one comic who went over his time. And I said, hey, man, you can't be up next week. Whatever his name was, let's just call him Roger. Next week, I show up on a Tuesday. And this is in the middle of like LA being all gangs. Do you remember that time period when it was scary to live? Yeah.
Yeah.
Even people who didn't belong to a gang thought they were in a gang. Right? Everyone looked like a gang.
Well, that's when the death row and everything was, everybody's throwing gang signs.
Even nice kids were like driving around carrying guns just to look tough. You know what I mean? Like, it was a weird time in history. So all of a sudden, someone comes upstairs and says, there is a dude in, and it was like a Impala, like ghettoed out Impala down the stairs, who is Roger's cousin named, and I didn't hear Freeze Love. I heard the Freezer, who wants to speak with you. So I'm thinking, all right, I'm dead for sure, because I didn't give this motherfucker some time this week. So I get to die over some bullshit. So I walk down the stairs and Freeze Love, what is he, 6 foot, 300 pounds, something like that?
Nicole, he's a big dude, you remember.
I remember.
Big dude. Yeah.
Looks like this sort of gangster, you know, whatever. Gets out of the car. He's like, you Dante? And I was like, yes. And he goes, hey, my cousin Roger, he was supposed to be on the show. He goes, I've never done stand-up before. Why don't you give me his spot? And I was like, you got it, buddy. Come on in. It's yours. Whatever you want. Welcome. So I take him upstairs. And Faison's on stage. And I don't like Faison because he's my friend and he was probably the most famous on the show that night. Right. Well, Freeze standing around. He's like, you said I was next, man. This guy's doing 10 minutes. It's been 25 minutes, blah, blah, blah. He's never been on stage in his life. I was like, calm down, man. That's Faison Love. He's like, I don't give a fuck who he is. And Faison goes, who just said that? He's like, I'm next, motherfucker. Get off stage. And Faison was like, fine, let's see what you got. Freeze went up there and killed on his first night. Could not
right,
believe
he told us about it.
Yeah, killed. And
well, he's a natural, not,
which was the only thing I cared about, as long as I wasn't murdered.
And the thing about Freeze Love is, yeah, he can intimidate. He's a big motherfucker, but when you get to know him, nicest guy in the world.
Yep. He's a grip. Like, I've seen him on movie sets and shit.
Yeah. Now, the show you had in the Belly Room, I tell this to a lot of upcoming comics because it's a great story. And I don't know if you remember it, but this is going back a long ways. But I drove up from San Diego to do your show. I was doing a few shows, but you said I'll give you some time. So you're like, you're next. And the crowd was really good. I was like, man, I can't wait. And you're like, hold on, I gotta bump you, but you'll be next. This
Please
is Mark Curry from Hanging with Mr. Cooper when that show was on TV. And did a half hour, terrific. Very good set. But in the middle of the set, you're like, I got one more than you. And it's Eddie Griffin, who I think is a great and very underrated comic, but man, he doesn't know what a light is.
5 hour sets.
He doesn't know what a light is, and he's notorious for he's going to do as long as he wants, and he doesn't give a shit. So he did about 45 minutes.
Whoa.
Wait. In the middle of that, you said, there's only one more than you. Damon Wayans did an hour of some of the best stand-up I've ever seen in my life. I wish I had a tape recorder because this was brilliant.
I'm so glad you're bringing all this up because when I try to describe these times to my wife, she believes me. She also just can't believe that it's real. She's like, I don't believe, you know, like how was any of
this was real. And then you're like, okay, you're next. And I went up and I, this is, I, you know, I'd only been doing comedy maybe a year or two, if that. And I actually, somebody in the audience, I paused and he actually said, I feel bad for you. I wish you were funny, but you're not. But the lesson I learned is I came back a couple months later and I had to follow Damon Wayans at the Improv. And I figured out how to do it is to really acknowledge what happens, make sure everybody gets that out of their system, and then go into my thing. But I didn't know that the first time.
Oh, man. Right.
These are lessons you learn the hard way. And when you bomb, it's hard. So I appreciate that, that I got to follow those three great comics. And you work with everybody. And you know what? You know everybody.
I guess so. Yeah. I'm
Banning sure you Generations now.
What's that?
Banning Generations now.
Yeah, man. I don't know if you remember this, but so in college, I went to USIU, which was in, I don't know, by Miramar.
Well, I was going to bring this up because my father cooked at USIU, but I think that was before you went to college there because I was a kid.
Hey, so that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I went there. A friend of mine named Eric Bishop says to me that, well, it's a long story, but his girlfriend says to me, Eric wants to do stand-up. Will you help him? The next day I show up to school, he wants to fight me because his girlfriend had shown up to my work to tell me this privately, and he found out about it thinking we were having an affair. So I'm like calming him down. I'm like, dude, I have a girlfriend. I was at work. Your girlfriend, here's the truth. She wants you to do stand-up. She said, you know, that you should talk to me, and I'll help you however I can. He's like, oh, that's it? Are you sure? I was like, yes. So we became buddies. I call the Comedy Store. I talk to Fred. He's like, the lineup. So Fred is the manager.
Fred Burns was the manager, yes.
I call him up and he says, I don't have time for him. He goes, but you can give him half of your time. I said, fine, give him half of my time. So he and I sit around, we write, I drive him out there and he kills night one, kills. Starts going up at the Comedy Store down there all the time. Next year I show up to college and he doesn't show up. And I'm like, where's Eric? And everyone's like, oh, he moved to LA, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, let's fast forward to now. He, right after that, he changed his name to Jamie Foxx and won an Academy Award. So,
all because of you.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that he started in San Diego. That's amazing.
Yeah, man. He was my college buddy. I had sex with people in his apartment.
Well, who hasn't? Well, but go ahead.
Very clearly. It's such a weird thing because I don't remember sex with people that often, but I remember there was this one girl and I thought she was like okay, but it was like a huge favor to him because he really liked her friend. So I was just entertaining her, and I just remember Jamie had drawn a picture of God, it was some singer from like the 80s, Terrence Trent D'Arby. He drew a picture of him and it was really fucking good. It was just hand drawn, and I stared at it the whole time, like, holy fuck, this kid's talented. I could not believe it. Yeah, because like a photograph. So the whole time I'm like making out with this girl, I'm just staring at Terrence Trent D'Arby for some reason.
Well, whatever gives you an erection, you know, you got to do it. You got to do what you got to do.
Taking my mind off of her and the erection.
Right. Well, Terrence Trent D'Arby was a good looking guy. But I, you know, the similar story I have to that is, is that I was in an improv class with Bobby Lee, And he said, should I try stand-up? I said, sure, you're funny. So I encouraged him to do stand-up, and here he is. He's a big star. And yep. That's all I'm going to say about that, because my last couple interactions with him were not great. But
Me too. You want to know what happened? I directed a movie that I wrote called Bro, What Happened? And it starred, did you see it?
I didn't see it. I actually watched an inappropriate movie last night, and we'll get to that. But Bro, What Happened, which with Jamie Kennedy and Bobby Lee.
Right. Bobby Lee, Jamie Kennedy, Lorenzo Lamas, on and on and on. A whole bunch of funny people are in it. It's a really fun movie. So what happened was we had Tommy Chong playing someone, and we had hours before he was supposed to be on set. Like, it's 9 at night. Tommy right. Chong calls and cancels. Well, we're a real movie set. Like, we have a whole crew, and you know what I mean? Like, it's not...
It costs money.
So I call a million celebrities. Bobby's at the top of my list, and I just tell him truthfully, hey, man, there's this part. It's, you know, you can shoot it out in a day, but it's going to take all day, but you're throughout the movie. You know, you're on a lot of phone calls. You are, you know, interacting with some people. And he's like, great. When he comes to
the... Keep telling the story. I got some construction. I'm going to close the windows. Go ahead.
That's okay. So we're on set, and the producers, I didn't produce this one. The producers came up and said, hey, Bobby, we need you to go to this tent and take pictures for the poster. So he does. He goes to the tent and takes pictures for the poster. So then the movie is about to come out. The artwork is out. Everything is done. Everything's done. And all of a sudden, Bobby is one of like 10 people on the poster. When the artwork comes out, Bobby goes, take me off the poster. And I go, Bobby, I don't have control over that, but I'll call the producers and see. He goes, yeah, I didn't agree to that. I'm like, Bobby, I'm pretty sure you went and took photos for the poster. We wouldn't have these photos unless you went and physically took them. He's like, I didn't understand this. I thought this was like some small project you were doing and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I told you I'm directing a movie. We had Tommy Chong, and now you're here. And he's like, dude, fuck you. I can't believe this. And this was a month after he was like crying on my set, saying that I had saved his life, that he wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for me, that he was going to commit suicide. And I talked him out of it, blah, blah, blah. So a month later, he's yelling at me, and I'm saying, hey, man, have your manager call the producers. If this is a big deal, I said, because it's out of my hands. It's not my movie. I got right. paid to write and direct it. I'm done. And so he, never spoke to me again. And then I've heard that he had talked about it on his podcast a few times, or if he ever runs into me in public, he'll be like, yeah, I saw Dante again. I didn't talk to him. It's like, God damn, dude. You're the weirdo. I didn't do anything.
Well, I'm glad it's not me. And by the way, I have to preface this by saying there's no question. Bobby Lee, fantastic comedian, good actor. He's very, very talented.
With him. I don't even dislike him now. I just don't even know why he got mad at me over it. You know what I mean? Like,
well, at least that's something semi-professional. He was at the Comedy Store once. I was at the House of Blues at a concert with my girlfriend. We went over to the Comedy Store because I wanted to say hi to some people. He's sitting there, and he starts giving me such shit in front of my girlfriend. Oh, you got even fatter. You're all sweaty. You're always sweaty. You had the talent, but you never had the drive. That's why you never made it. I was just going over to say congratulations on your success. I'm glad you're doing well.
Unbelievable that he would do that to you.
He was such an asshole. And, you know, I've also heard people that he slammed on this podcast. He was such an asshole that Barry Sobel told him, hey, why are you doing this in front of his girlfriend? Why are you bagging on this guy so hard? And, but you know what? Who knows? I caught him on a bad day, maybe, but I don't.
Maybe, but here's the way I feel about it. Anyone, if you have success and you are petty enough to go after anyone less successful than you, then you are trash. Really? Because especially for no reason. Like, there was no reason to come after you and to do that. Right. You've been friends with him. You didn't offend him. You didn't do something wrong. He obviously has real issues. I mean, that's what his podcast seems to be about, is always talking about other people, you know? And
Well, I ran into his girlfriend a few years after that. And she's like, and I told her the story. I'm like, and the thing is, every other time I see him, he's cool. He's like, hey, what's going on? And then the other time he's like, well, you're a piece of shit. And you're like, I can't reconcile this. And I told her that. And she's like, oh, I believe it. But he's not like that now. So I hope that's the case. But whatever. Let's get forget that. Yeah, as I said, you were writing and directing. And I know you don't want, you said that you really don't want to get into this. But how did you get involved with the ShamWow guy, Vince Offer, and co-write the underground comedy movie and be an inappropriate movie?
And write it and blah, blah, blah. For money. So in 1990-something, too, let's say, I was at the Comedy Store La Jolla just for the weekend doing a show, and the ShamWow guy shows up, and he's like, hey, and he wasn't famous back then. He was just some dude with long hair. He's like, hey, man, I'm writing a movie. I just shot some scenes down in Mexico. I really like your stuff. Can you help me write this movie? So I guess he had also talked to Bobby Lee that day and said kind of the same thing to him. So me and Bobby Lee, we helped him write this movie, and it was a weird, you know, it's like the Kentucky Fried Movie. It's like a skit movie, you know, like Saturday Night Live. Like everything is just a skit. He also has a weird sense of humor to where you're like, no, that's not funny. And it's like, it doesn't matter. I want it.
So, you remember the ShamWow commercial, Nicole?
Yeah, I remember ShamWow.
Slap yeah, that, chop, ShamWow. So,
I remember so, Inappropriate Movie.
Yeah. So I ended up writing and directing all of his like commercials and movies and whatever, just because we had that sort of relationship. And so that was like a side hustle for me forever, which sort of led me into directing movies because people were like, oh, you directed that ShamWow commercial? Oh, you did this one? You did that? You did... You know, there was a product we came up with called the Shticky that I named because Shtick is like, you know, comedy Shtick. Yeah. And it was a sticky roller. So we called it.
So wait a second, did you direct his commercials too or just the movie?
Yeah.
Really? You directed ShamWow commercials?
Now, not the very first ShamWow, but everything else, man, was like, you know, when we were doing stuff, he and I would go pick a product. It's not like he invents them, but he is right. The owner. He's not just a... you know, a spokesman. So it's his company. So he and I would go to like a fairgrounds where everybody is selling, you know, things like that, the ShamWow, things like that. Right. He would go up to someone and say, you know, I like this thing. How much would you sell your company for? And if they wanted to sell it, we'd buy it for 10 grand, rename the thing, change the coloring, you know, call up China, remake it a different way and kind of go from there.
That's a really genius business model.
Yeah.
He made a lot of money off. Did you?
I made pretty good money off of it. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. And then, you know, my business model for my company. So I own Golden Artist Entertainment, and management wise and bookings wise, everything is great. But when it comes to making movies, I think the biggest mistake most people make is they make a passion project, and passion projects don't always pay you. And I don't like to lose money or anyone else's money or anything like that. And so what we do, which is really smart, we have distributors. So if right now someone gave us money and they're like, I want to make a movie. So instead of just saying to them, okay, well, I'm going to write a movie about this and this is what we're making. I don't do that. I have distributors. I call them and say, hey, what do you need? And they tell me. And then I write treatments, send it back to them. And if they approve it, then we make the movie because it's pre-sold. So afterwards, I don't have to go to festivals. I don't have to do anything. It just goes straight to HBO or Netflix or wherever they sell, you know, it to. Yeah. And thank God, because that's the best way to do it. You know you're going to make your money back up front before you even start a camera. By the way, happy St. Patrick's Day. I like your hat.
Thank you. I was like, I was so hungover, I forgot to put it on before the video started.
It's okay. Yeah, it's kind of blurring at the top for some reason, your phone. But if you can, yeah, there you go. See, say something while you're doing that.
I wouldn't say what?
That's fine. Anyway, but to go back to the underground comedy movie for a second, I remember, and I guess it took years for that to get everything together, but he had like, the big selling point is he had cameos by Slash and Michael Clark Duncan, who basically it didn't come out till after The Green Mile.
Right. Well, yeah.
I guess he was just a regular actor at that time.
Great. Yeah, and at the time there were other celebrities in it, like Ant, comedian, was more popular back then. He was in it. Bobby Lee was in it. I was in it. Yeah, so he had like up and coming comedians plus, you know, stars that were just popping, like Michael Clark Duncan. He got pretty lucky.
Right. And then and you have seen an inappropriate movie, Nicole. I'm surprised because I just watched it last night. And I don't want to get into that whole thing, but you know, they had to. I was surprised to see Oscar winner Adrian Brody, but I guess they're friends.
Man, it was me, Adrian Brody, Rob Schneider, Michelle Rodriguez. Like, it was a good.
It was a good cast. It was really awesome.
But
part on a stick, but it has a great cast. I mean, if you get that cast, why would you make that fucking movie?
Well, that's the thing. You know, the I was waiting for you to pop up in the whole movie the whole time, but it was, and I guess it was Ari Shaffir, the comedian, and I guess he had a web series before where he was just being a racist, and you and him.
Go ahead. It's higher than that. Like he's obviously Jewish, and he'll like especially make fun of Jews, but every race, yes.
Yeah, I mean it was. I mean, in the movie, it was a parody of The Amazing Race called The Amazing Racist. Right. And basically, you were in the last vignette where you and he were on the beach telling black people that you could take them back to Africa on a boat.
Correct. Which and obviously is set up and a parody. And, you know, like, even the people who walk up, if you look hard enough, one of them is my wife.
That's what I thought. See, this is what I was going to ask, because the fisticuffs at the end.
Yeah.
They look pretty real, but
It's because the actor was, I don't know how to say this. Like, that was the weirdest day of shooting of my life. Even though I had written for The Amazing Racist when he went into like the Jewish supermarket, it was me and Christina Pedzinski who were the head writers for all of his stuff that day. And, but when I seen, no one told me what it was about. Even when I went out there, I didn't even know why I was wearing the outfit. I didn't. I thought I was playing a Roman soldier. No one told me. So when I got out on the boat, that's when they started telling me instructions in my ear. And they said, well, your girlfriend at the time is going to walk up and, you know, just act like everybody is just a regular person. So the guy at the end, I guess his reaction was, you know, he was just told react however you would. So he decided to hit Ari. Out of the movie, but I had to be like, dude, none of this is real, you know. Like, even the boat was like a dinghy that was broken. It was like sitting, it wasn't even
that was obvious, locked.
Yeah, it wasn't.
So he was an actor, but he just overreacted.
He overreacted. And what's funny is he sent me a message last year asking if he could join my management company. And when I looked at his credits, that was the only thing he had ever done, and that was forever ago. So I had to say no.
Right. Oh. Although I think the best line in the whole movie is when you call him Tupac Insecure.
Yeah.
Not that there's a lot of competition, but I would say that's the best line in the movie.
Oh, thanks. I had no idea what we were doing. I was just, it really was fucking uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie. Like, maybe
playing a slave master, I don't doubt it.
Yeah. And Pazinski was sending him, you know, lines and stuff that he was saying. But for me, I was not told a thing. I just stood there and there were props on the boat, watermelons, you know, just racist, dumb bullshit.
Yeah.
So I had to pretend to be racist.
Right. And you mentioned her. So I think this is a good segue. You are married to a comedian. A very good comedian.
I am. And you know what else is a good segue? I'm actually, my daughter's black and I'm also a civil rights activist. So that people don't think I'm a fucking racist.
Dante, I can assure you, Dante is not racist, but
not even.
But here's
close.
The thing. Here's why. I'll be honest. I didn't find inappropriate movie funny. I didn't find Ari Shaffir stuff funny, and I will tell you why.
I don't find any of it funny. I hated that movie.
Right, but you know, I met Ari Shaffir once. I have nothing against him, but to do that type of comedy, Don Rickles can get away with that stuff. Lisa Lampanelli can get away with that stuff because. You know they are not racist, and it's hard to quantify. But Ari Shaffir does not have that whimsical,
right? There's nothing
hidden tone.
Racist. He never smiles, so you never know if he's joking. You know what I mean? Like, what's his name? Borat. Even though he's not smiling, you still get that it's a fucking joke, and there's no malice.
Right, right. And I know that's what he's going for.
Malice or not.
Even Carol O'Connor, when he was Archie Bunker, you could tell that's not really him. But he could play that character well. But yeah. If you got a guy that was really racist doing that character, it would be horrendous.
You know, it's crazy, man. I love my roles in so many movies. And it's like, that one is the one. People are like, hey, I just saw you in the... I'm like, damn.
It's on Tubi now, so you can't get away from it.
Right. Go see Bro What Happened, man. I'm really funny in that. Like, I play this guy named Mr. Tom, and Rebecca plays my wife. She plays this crazy ex-stripper who's like, just like, she is... If this were The Hangover, she would be Mr. Chow. Like, she's nuts. That's great. Yeah.
And yeah. Bro, What Happened? Is that streaming or no? You know if it's streaming anymore? You know,
but, and so the producers had a fight. I actually want to buy it off of them. But if you go to YouTube and just type in the movie, you'll find it. Or if not torrented, it's out there.
Okay.
I'll probably put it back up on my YouTube again soon and just kind of like put it out there. Because I hate that it's not out there anymore. Actually, right. I think right on Prime or somewhere. Who fucking knows? I don't know.
Now, did you have any qualms about dating a comedian? Because I know myself, I tried that once or twice and it was not a good fit for me.
So good question. I always used to tell people don't date comedians because I thought, you know, how will this work out? But I do want to say this. I dated a girl named Shema. Do you remember Shema?
It was another comedian I was going to bring up who was a great comedian that came from San Diego and was very successful. She was on Fox Sports. Top. Of course I know Shema. I saw Shema a few years ago in Vegas.
So Shema was just working at a casino down there, Viejas, and we started dating, and she wasn't even a comic. She didn't even become a comic till like 2 years after we stopped dating. But she loved comedy. Like, she would show up all the time. Like, I don't know. So I never really thought of her as a comic. So I had never had real experience doing it. But I will say this. My ex-wife was a scientist and a nurse, and we were the wrong match. I thought it was good because she could just let me go out at night and do my thing, and she had her thing. But then I realized, like, I'd be on Last Comic Standing and want to watch myself, and she's like, oh, Ally McBeal is on. You know, don't you have a copy of this somewhere? I'm like, copy? It's airing for the first time.
On TV live now.
Live now. And she's like, well, you'll have to go in the other room. Like, other room? How are you not excited that I'm on television right now? Like, so when I finally ended up with my wife, who wasn't a great comic when I met her, but I said, hey, if you do this, 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 and this, I will take you on the road. She did it. And she was good. And she deserves to be on the road. And she's very funny and all of those things. And also has her own credits, you know, like she starred in like, I don't know, 20 horror movies. And she's a big star in the LGBT community due to her movies that she's been in. And, you know, stuff like that.
One of the top 100 screen queens. She hosted the AVN Awards. And yeah, I remember her when she first starting out and where she is now. Well, last time I saw her was in at the Dirty 1230 with you. And man, she wrecked it. She was so good.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, she's super duper funny. Like, and the nice part is, you know, I was on the road for years by myself and she's just smarter than me. Like, I'd end up in Kansas City in snow in the winter. And she'd be like, why are we in Kansas City in the winter? Why don't we perform in Hawaii in the winter and Kansas City in the spring? And I was like,
you're smart. Oh, you're not going to get an argument from me.
Yeah.
But I remember, I mean, you know, I met your daughter. I met your ex-wife. I even go back to Cece back in the day. I mean,
my God. Cece. Wow. Yeah.
Cece was Dante's, probably this is before Rebecca was even born, but you were going out when I first met you with a woman named Cece. It was very, very nice and attractive, but.
Yeah. Very attractive lady. She, you know, what's crazy about her, man. She's a Facebook friend and I just looked her up. And I mean, if you look her up on Facebook, she looks identical.
Good for her.
Huh?
I said, great. Good for her.
Yeah. Good for her.
Like I say, you two are, maybe it's the sex you two had together, but for some reason you guys never age.
You know, being happy and making people laugh and laughing a lot, you know, I think performers seem to live a lot longer than most people, don't you?
I think comedians definitely preserve themselves better than rock stars.
For sure.
Yeah, you look. Keith Richards and you look at, you know,
how about Dane Cook?
Yeah. I'm talking about somebody that's probably the same age. You know, Tommy Chong is older than Keith Richards, but looks better. Tons better. You know,
Jaylen, the same age and he looks better.
Yeah. He looks way better. And, you know, we had another guy, who's the guy who opens for Sinatra? That's,
oh yeah. What's his name? He even has a star on the, I know who you mean.
I always forget the name.
Tom Dreesen.
Tom Dreesen's like 85 and he looks great.
Dude, he always looks great.
Always. Yeah. So, now I was going to ask you about Last Comic Standing and how that experience was, because, you know, I remember when it first started, and well, Last Comic Standing, I keep telling people it's kind of a bait and switch, because you really have to be established to really get on the show.
Yeah, so that's fairly true. I'll give you what sort of went down. Obviously, we know that Dat Fan was not established. You know, some of them weren't. But yes, in later years, it became something where managers would get you into private auditions, even though people were standing in line for hours.
There's a one time I auditioned for it. I actually went to Tempe because I figured there wouldn't be that many people there. I got there at 4 a.m. There were 260 people there. They only took 200 people. I left and people were still like, you know, it's just there to get the picture of the line.
Yeah, man. That's why they do it. You know, I auditioned for it 3 times. The first 2 years, I didn't feel super comfortable. One time my daughter was there and she was like yelling and trying to get in because she was 2 and, you know, like whoever was watching her wasn't doing a good job and blah, blah, blah. But the next year, my friend Alonzo Bowden became a judge. And so I just said to him, I'm going to audition this year. Obviously, you know, it's you and a bunch of people make the decision. And he's like, it's not even us. It's the producers, but go on. And I was like, just give me advice, man. And he goes, here's the best advice I can give anyone. He goes, I don't know how you audition, but every big headliner I've seen is fucking up. They all come in here wanting to do their big closing bit that takes like 2 minutes, and they're only being given 30 seconds inside. Even though they tell you you got 2 minutes, you're getting 30 seconds. And he goes, in those 30 seconds, they want 7 jokes. So if you're still doing setup at the end of 30 seconds, they just politely say thank you and ask you to leave. And you end up saying, hey, I'm not done with my bit. And they're like, that's okay. So I said to myself, I'm going to do 2 minutes, but my first, you know, 7 jokes are going to take place in the first 30 seconds. And I'm just going to fucking be on, because I realized all they want is sound bites. They just want sound bites. That's how Dat Fan won. Everything he said was a one liner. You know, that's
but he has such a great backstory too, though. That was really what did it.
Sure, I'll agree with that. But if you go back, because I rewatched every season before I went to do it, just because I was, you know, studying. And the one thing I didn't realize was that Dat actually won. If you go back, the audience didn't know anyone. They didn't know who Ralphie May was back then. They didn't know who Dat Fan was. So they were voting just based on who was funniest that day. And you could see these headliners collapsing because in 2 minutes, he was telling 20 jokes and they had told 2.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I was going to say, I felt like I was going to have a heart attack on this show. Like, I've been on game shows. You don't get nervous about that because it doesn't affect your career. But this, you feel like, oh my God, if I fuck up at all, they don't edit that. They want you to fuck up so that they can show a fuck up. They want you to do well so they know you do well, you know? And what ended up happening was, we auditioned in like January. By February, you already know who the cast is because we've already done the semifinals and filmed everything. And now in June, the show is going to start. But from February to June, they used to run a commercial. Well, the commercial started off with some of the cast members. It started off with John Reap and Lavelle Crawford. And then it showed 10 comedians who we know are not on the show because I already know who the cast is. And then at the end of the commercial, they showed John Reap and Lavelle Crawford again. The only two people out of me, Amy Schumer, Doug Benson, Ralph, it doesn't matter. Out of all these people, they are only showing 2. So when I show up to this sequester hotel, I say to everyone else, you guys, NBC, wants either Lavelle Crawford or John Reap to win this show. We must vote them out right away.
Right.
And they're like, sure, we'll do that. Well, I started winning all the audience favorite awards and getting standing ovations and blah, blah, blah. So they decided they were going to vote me out. Well, guess what? At the end of the show, the two people left standing were Lavelle Crawford and John Reap. And it's because NBC made them famous. When we would go to any comedy club to film, the audience would go crazy as we got off the bus, only for Lavelle and for John, because they had just seen them all year long saying right. two jokes. And so they were famous. And none of, you know, Amy Schumer got off, not a clap. I get off, not a clap. Not, you know, Doug Benson, not a clap. Soon as Lavelle gets off, John Reap. So they won everything because it was manipulated by NBC.
But Amy Schumer got the last laugh.
What's that?
That Amy Schumer got the last laugh because she became the superstar of the bunch.
Yeah. I mean, everyone else seemed to get as big or bigger than, you know, the people who won. John Reap won. What happened to him?
Right. I don't know. I don't even know the name. I know Lavelle.
He was the Hemi guy, that blonde guy who'd be like, hey, the Hemi guy. You don't remember that? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So how was it? How was the living situation?
They put us up in a hotel. We were at the Sheraton and Universal, and it was great. I mean, free food every day and all that. But I had friends there. I knew Lavelle. I knew Ralph. I can't believe I can't think of Ralph's name. I knew some of these people. And I was making friends with others. And then other people, I don't know if they just wanted to cause drama because we were on TV. But, what is her name? She's on a TV show right now. She's on that Babla Zambazola. She's a comedian. I don't know.
I'm not placing it. What happened?
Anyway, she was on the show with me, and she kept starting fights with me because I do impressions. She's like, Dante, I want to speak with you, but only when cameras are around. I like your impressions. I didn't find it funny. I didn't think you'd stand up. You know, just like bullshit. All this bullshit. I'm like getting on me all the time over this stuff. And then after the show was over and I was booking comedians, she would hit me up and I would give her spots. And she's like, sorry, I acted that way. I don't know what was wrong with me. Like, everyone has an apology for how they acted when they were on the show, except me. Like, I showed up with games, food. I thought we're all going to be friends and hang out. Everyone stayed to themselves and were kind of dicks.
Well, I mean, I live with three comedians, so I know that's those are people that if you get in a fight, really know how to cut you. That's why you're married to a comedian, and I've seen both of you shut down hecklers hard. I can imagine that you guys get in a fight. It's brutal.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen that often from what I see, but.
No, we don't fight. I mean, how could we? Plus, we're just, you know, we're so in love. Like, if we ever fight, it's over nothing. Or it feels worse than it is because we're so in love. You know what I mean? Because I don't fight with her. So when we do argue, it's like, oh, my whole life's out of whack. Because this is kind of weird to say, but like my whole family died in the past 10 years. And so, you know, I have a wife and daughter, and that's kind of it. Like, I have a sister. I love my sister, and I have two cousins, and I love them, but haven't seen them since my parents died. Haven't seen any of them. Right. And they died 7 years ago. Like, where's my family? You know, like, why don't you call me? Like, I butt dialed my sister the other day, and she wrote back. She was like, oh, yeah, I'll call you in a few days. We'll catch up. And I was like, few days? You thought I just called.
Right. That's, I'm sorry to hear that, but I mean, I know. That's Nicole, right. Let me tell you something. These two, from the moment I saw them together, 10 years ago, whenever, when they first got together till now, or 2 years ago when I saw you at the Portland Comedy Festival, you guys are just one of these nauseatingly in love couples that just can't stop touching each other, can't stop fawning over each other.
You got that, man. It's so right. Because like my ex, it's like we had fights over, we haven't had sex in a month. We haven't had sex in 6 months. You know, we don't have those kind of fights, she and I. We've been together 15 years, actually still act like teenagers. We, you know, I still open every door. I still drive her everywhere she wants to go. There's never a day she doesn't have fresh flowers. You know, it's like 3 days, every 3 days she gets a few more dozen. If it's her period coming, I fly in chocolates from Vegas where she wants them. You know what I mean? Like, It's like, I want to be the best husband for her and just only cause happiness, love, health, safety, freedom. That's all I care about, man. Love, health, happiness, safety, freedom. I have it tattooed on my chest.
Wow.
Yeah, there's nothing else that matters. You know, right. Money doesn't matter. It's like, if you don't have love, health, happiness, safety, or freedom, you would trade it for money any day, any day.
Well, if it's any consolation, if I go without sex for 6 months, I fight with myself and things get pretty, I get pretty black and blue all over. But I can't believe how quick the time has gone. I knew this was going to be. Just have a couple questions and I'll let you go.
Okay. I just got to, by the way, an ex-client of mine's jail trial just got moved because he's incoherent. And
well, I wasn't gonna mention, but since you're talking about Ron Jeremy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I don't care if you mention it. I have nothing to do with it. Like, anyone who thinks that, you know, if someone's manager or agent has something to do with, you know, Bill Cosby or Weinstein or some shit, that's just stupid. You know, well, I put a press release to the world the minute he called me and said, hey, I'm going to jail for, I've been accused of blah, blah, blah. I said, hey, man, I hope you didn't do this. But if you did, I hope you rot in jail. And I said, I'm going to have to write that down and send it to the press. And he's like, fair enough. So I did. Like, if you read the press, it's basically, hope you didn't do it. But if you did, you deserve to die in jail.
But the question is, did you hear the murmurings before? I know, I'm assuming you never saw anything. And you went on the road with
him. If I saw anything, I'll tell you what, I would have dropped him. There was only one murmuring before, and that was the Rolling Stone in 2017, just before Thanksgiving, sent me a bunch of stuff saying, you know, the Me Too movement was hitting everyone at that time. So Ron Jeremy's, it really pissed me off because there were like 3 things out of 10 that I said, Ron, I don't care about the other 7. Those don't even sound normal to me. Like, one of the 7, just so you can understand. There was a porn star who went with Ron to Negril, Jamaica, to a nudist resort. They were hanging out together nude all day long. She invited him back to her room. They sat on her bed. She said, he put his hand on my leg and asked for a massage. When I said no, he left my room. That was one of the complaints. Like, I don't even understand how that made it. You know what I mean? But yeah, there were three big complaints. And I said, hey, man, I have to drop you as a client because if any of this is even close to true. And he came up with proof. He showed me proof, actual proof. That I said, oh my God, then you need to sue. Because, for example, one girl said, Ron raped me 4 times in a weekend as I stayed at his house. Well, who's ever going to believe that? You know, that he raped you Friday, you went to work, you came home, he raped you again. You know what I mean? Right. So he goes, okay, first of all, you know that doesn't sound right. He goes, but 10 years ago, she went on a radio show. She's only stayed with me once. And on this radio show, she talked about the weekend she stayed with me. I listened to it. And she does say, the whole weekend, Ron begged me for sex. Begged. And he smelled. I didn't want it. Finally, he said, can I just eat you out? I agreed to it. He did it. It was the best I've ever had. And blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, I'm checking her off as it didn't happen because she just said in her own words it didn't happen. So it was right. Things like that. So that was the only time. And then cut to, you know, 2-3 years later, a phone call in the morning when I think all of this dumb shit is over. And you know what made me say, I think you did it, motherfucker, in my own head, was it wasn't women suing him for money. When people sue for money, you can always say, hey, maybe there's false intentions.
Right.
This was the district attorney, Jackie Lacey, and 30 women who will not make a dime. They just want him to go to jail. So at that point, I was like, okay, I'm done with this fool. Like, if he did even one of those things, I don't want to be associated.
Right. And you made it very clear in your public statement. Oddly enough, Dante actually booked me to open for Ron Jeremy, provided I gave him a ride. And I did, thinking I would get all sorts of great porno movie stories. Dante neglected to mention he's a narcoleptic, slept the whole way from Hollywood to Oxnard and on the way back. But
yeah. And also, I want to, you know, say this, like, these accusations also, I think, may have happened. I haven't followed it, but mostly before I was even his manager. I was only his manager for like 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the only manager he ever had, he never had agents or managers before me. He handled his whole career himself. And I didn't handle him for porn. I handled him for comedy, movies, you know, whatever, documentaries, shit like that.
Right.
But yeah, man, he was one of those clients where it's like, yeah, he helped build our business, but he also, you know, is one of those band-aids on the business where it's not our fault, but at the same time, you're like, God damn.
It casts a shadow either way.
Yeah, casts a shadow, but that's okay. I mean, we have so many other great talents and so many people.
I mean, yeah, you got, you know, you got Jimmy Walker, you got, I remember when you were repping, or were you repping? I know you were involved with Fred Berry from What's Happening, and you did the most. Fred
be my opening act forever, man.
Yeah.
John Melendez.
Southern John.
Tracy Bingham from Baywatch. Kill Theodric. I think it's going to be one of the next huge comics out there. Plus, I have a ton of those in my stable of comics, man, right now.
A lot of people that... We're at the Portland Comedy Festival with myself. I know you on your website, and I don't know how up to date it is, but I think you signed Ashley Rose, is that right? And you got Mike Eaton. Mike Eaton. You got Alyssa Patino. You got some great comedians, and you got people like Cato Kalin. You got it's a smorgasbord. Whatever you need, Dante's got you covered.
Yeah, man, we have a great group of people, and everyone's different. Like I, you know, we have people who've been on TV. We've had people that are brand new. We have, you know, up and coming comics. We have great writers. You know, we're constantly making movies. We're making a movie called Karma right now. It's a horror movie, basically. What was that movie where everybody was about to get on an airplane, and then the little guy got off? Final destination, sort of like that, except with karma, you know.
Okay.
Like, yeah, karma's after these people.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And, one more thing, and then we'll let you plug what you got to plug and actually get out of your parking spot and drive. You ran for mayor?
Yeah, man, I'm very political. So in 2001, I ran for mayor. I didn't want to win back then. This year, I was going to run for real, and we decided against it just because our company is so busy right now. And my wife was worried it would look bad if I did that, but it's whatever. It doesn't matter.
Greg Davis was recalled and Schwarzenegger ran, or was before that?
God, it was 2001. So yeah, Schwarzenegger was long gone by then. We had no mayor at the time. Hollywood Highland was not built. It was just sitting there for years, like filled with crazy people inside because they stopped working on it. There was no carpool lane at the 101 and 405, and we had prostitutes everywhere. So I came in, and those were my things I wanted to get rid of. I hated how Hollywood was like overrun with prostitutes. So I got on TV with all these other candidates, and I kept saying, what are you going to do about this? Why can't we enforce the loitering laws? Blah, blah, blah. Why is there no carpool lane at the 405 and the 101? Why is Hollywood Highland not being built? So I just kept forcing it, and everyone had to answer this, and then whoever became mayor was going to have to take care of it. Within year one, there was a carpool lane, 405, 101. Hollywood Highland got built, and they enforced the loitering laws, which got prostitutes off the streets.
So you're not only responsible for Jamie Foxx's career, you're responsible for the revitalization of Hollywood.
I'm trying, man. And I still do. Like, I go out all the time and get people to do stuff as an activist. And I'm trying to, you know, I've really cleaned up the Hollywood Police Department. They were extremely corrupt. Extremely. But my videos, man, those people don't even work there. And there were at least 20 cops I got moved or fired from that location because they were so corrupt.
Damn.
Well, yeah, I have videos, you guys, of Proud Boys beating me up in front of CNN with cops watching, who hated me so much. They were on bikes. I swear to God, watch the videos. I said, you guys, they're fucking hitting me. Do something. And the cops on their bikes put their heads down and went, Dante, we don't see a thing. And they put their heads down. It's all on video.
Well, is that on your
false ticket in one location and drive away laughing on a sidewalk. They're nuts. These guys are nuts.
Is that on your YouTube channel?
All of it is on my social media is Dante the Comic.
Right.
D-A-N-T-E, the comic. And yeah, check me out on TikTok, Instagram, wherever. It's usually my TikTok and Instagram is where I put mostly that stuff. My Twitter, I'm very political. Facebook, I'm only on there to promote shows and see, you know, family, I guess. But right. Insta and TikTok is where I put most of my, like, you know, stand up and police videos.
I'll definitely follow.
Go ahead, Nicole.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'll definitely follow you. That sounds like interesting content.
Oh, thanks. I'll follow you back. And thanks. You're a horror writer?
Yeah.
Cool.
My book is called Some Fucked Up Shit. I'm working on a poetry book that should be out next month called Slow Burn. It's all gothic poetry. And then I'm going to start on a zombie story. So
I love it.
Put a few books out.
My podcast has always had strong, funny women, intelligent women that aren't comedians. Because
that's true.
I want to balance the male and female, and I also want to balance the. I'm going to come in with a joke with when Nicole comes up with a joke. She's not doing comic timing. She's just being herself. Right. It's great.
Correct.
Yes, but Adante, yeah, if you go to YouTube and if you dig really hard. You can see like a clip from the 90s where Dante gets heckled by somebody who threatens to shoot him with an AK.
Ugh.
And he wasn't joking. The dude had a gun. When I used to play
Black Did he show Rose, you the I gun?
Yeah, he had a gun. Some people used to threaten me all the time, but my thing was I would just get up there and be like, you can't shoot me in this shirt, man. I've got a mom. She's going to think I'm gay burying me in this shirt. You know, shit like that. And it would make people laugh and just not shoot me. And then all of a sudden the police would come in because the bouncers called them. And they would take them out to their car, and the guy would be like, I've got a Glock 9 in my glove compartment. And sure enough, the police would be like, hey, he told you exactly where it was. And wow. They were right. And like most of the time, though, when the police would come get these guys, they would be getting up going, I don't hate you anymore. You're funny, but I'm going to kill these motherfuckers.
Well, Dante, it's been a delight. It's great catching up with you. And I definitely... love to have you back on because we just barely scratched the surface of what you are, what you do. Nicole, how much fun was Dante?
Wonderful.
Just thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you too.
And Nicole, tell Dante and everybody where they can get a hold of you.
I'm Nicole6Books on Instagram and NicoleH6 on Facebook. And if you'd like to buy my book, Some Fucked Up Shit, it comes up right away in Google. There's not a lot of SEO competition for that title.
Good for you.
And I know Dante started before SEO, but your SEO must be kind of messed up. That's why you do go by Comic Dante, right?
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Dante and comedy, you put those two in and it's like Dante Alighieri comes up.
I had
no clue there would be an internet in the future.
Dante's Inferno, Dante's Peak, all that.
Comedy.
Problem is my last name is RusciOlelli, and I don't even know how to pronounce it, so... You can't have a last name at that point. I think it's SpaghettiOs.
It's not Ruscatelli?
It's Ruscellelli.
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 Well, Paisan, yeah. You can follow me, Goth Comedian, on all social media. This has been a blast. Thank you so much, Dante.
Thank you.
Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.